3. If you look up at the top story at Rents.com, you'll see about the third story down, survivor Rick Ardito's description of the massacre. It's a statement by Rick posted on Facebook on the 2nd of October, and it is a staggering thing to read. Every survivor has a story. They're all different, but they're all the same, because this is such a tragedy that I don't think anyone who didn't go through it could begin to understand what it does to the soul of someone inside. We talk about PTSD. It has to be that and then some. We're going to talk to Rick this hour. I'm very grateful for him spending time with us to try to reach out and explain this. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me, Jeff?
We got you loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you very much on a personal basis for standing up again and telling the story. It's not easy, but it is so important to get this out there. And I'm getting reports that people are being harassed and coerced and told, no, that's not what you saw, that's not what happened. And I don't know if that's happened to you or not, but going public is so important to get this out, to give people protection, I think, and security. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think for me, ultimately, going public is just important because I know what I saw. I know what happened when we were there. And I think people need to read those accounts for a number of reasons. One, I think it helps people a little bit better try to understand what the people who were there went through.
Right.
And I think it right now, a lot of these accounts like my own are really challenging the official narrative that's out there, and I think people need to ask questions about that.
I'm very glad you mentioned that. You are a very courageous man, as are others who are standing up and telling the story as they experienced it, not as they heard about it, as they lived it, and some didn't live it. Let me read just the first paragraph or two from Rick's statement. It's you're a fine writer, and this is, I don't know how you did it on the day after. I'm a writer, and I don't think I could have pulled myself together to do it. Here's the story from Rick. Cassie promised those babies that we would be home in the morning. This was one of the first thoughts that ran through my head as automatic gunfire rained down on the crowd at the Route 91 Harvest Festival. Our kids, Reagan 4 and Rocco 2, were definitely missing us during the first vacation we had ever planned away from them. So we had spoken with them frequently, and they were eagerly awaiting our return the next morning. I also thought of the three other women we were with, two of them with children, awaiting their return, and one celebrating her brother's birthday on that hallowed evening. Her brother that returned home from Afghanistan, only to get senselessly murdered for no reason by someone who didn't even know him. My single and sole purpose was to get these women to safety as quickly as I possibly could. Many of you have probably seen video of the concert and heard the gunfire and wondered what people were doing. The music still played and no one moved at first. I don't believe the first volley of gunfire heard was aimed at the venue. One of the things many people don't understand about gunfire is that there are actually two loud booms associated with almost all gunshots, except those few sounds that are designed to travel at subsonic speeds. The first boom is that which is caused by the rapid expansion of gas, which is a direct result of the ignition of the gunpowder in a confined space, known as the chamber of the firearm. The second is caused by the round reaching supersonic speeds. It's actually cracking the sound barrier, and is the same phenomena we all know as the sonic boom. And that's how Rick Ardito's statement, it is gripping. It's up there, it's about number 3. I would urge all of you to run and read it as soon as you possibly can. I want this to stay in your mind while this event is still as fresh as it is. You will be taken there. These words are really marvelously crafted. Are you a writer also by trade? I guess I can answer that myself. This is really amazingly well written, Rick.
I appreciate that. Actually, I'm not. I'm a CPA and I'm a business and accounting professor.
Uh-huh. Well, you're a writer now, friend. All right.
Yeah.
So the first trip away from the kids, the first vacation, so to speak, away from the kids. That had to be, for a parent, for both of you, something that you had to be okay with yourselves with doing and felt confident and secure. Little did you know. I can't even begin to deal with this, and I'm a father. I guess when you got home, well, tell us about how getting home was the next day.
Gosh, that's such a tough thing to describe.
I'm sure it is.
But, you know, obviously we got home very early in the morning because that night, once we were able to get back to our hotel, we packed up our stuff and we left right away. We live about 3 hours from Vegas. So
right.
We drove through the night and got home. My kids were staying with my mom that night.
Uh-huh.
And so we came home and got a few hours sleep before my wife went and picked them up. It was surreal. We were still in shock at that point, I'm sure, by the time
absolutely. No question.
The kids came home. But obviously just so grateful to hug them and hold them. And even though it was so weird because we had just been through the worst night of our lives, the most traumatic experience I could ever imagine going through, but they're completely oblivious to it. And that's weird, but it's also, to me, I think, a blessing because I don't know how I would how I would even begin to explain to them at this point what happened.
No, this is for later. Thank God they were kept away from it. I agree completely. That's not something a 2 or a 4-year-old need to deal with. No way. No,
yeah.
There's plenty of time for that. All right, let's go back to the concert. Why'd you go up there? What was it about the event that made you want to go in the first place?
You know, my wife is a big country music fan. I'm a fan as well.
Uh-huh.
Not quite as big of a fan as she is. I listen to all kinds of music, but she's always been a big country music fan. And so it was in March when she asked me, you know, if I would be interested in going to that. And we looked at tickets and we love to go to concerts. We've gone to all kinds of concerts, but we usually go to smaller shows, like, you know, House of Blues type level shows, nothing big like that.
Got it.
We talked about it and just decided to go. It was a lot of artists that we liked and we enjoy going out to Vegas. It's not too far. So we decided to go and we bought our tickets all the way back in March.
Weather was nice too, huh?
Yeah. The weather was really good. Usually that time of year is a good time to be in Vegas. You don't want to be there in, you know, June, July, or August.
No.
Late September, early October is usually pretty nice.
Right.
You know?
I worked there for 3 years. I know. You're right. What's it like to be in a group of, the numbers vary a little bit, but let's just call it 20,000 people. Where were you in that group?
Yeah, it's almost overwhelming. I've never been to a concert that big, so there was a lot of people there. One thing about that venue, though, it's pretty large, so it's not like you're jam-packed everywhere you stand, but anywhere near the main stage is very crowded, and we were standing pretty close to the main stage. We weren't right on top of it, but those of you who have seen pictures of the venue, I'm sure noticed there's an AstroTurf area on both sides of the main stage, the left and right side. Facing the stage, we were on the right side, up on that AstroTurf area, probably 60 yards from the stage, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Stage right or stage left as you look at it?
As you look at it, we're on the right-hand side. It would technically be stage left because
correct.
That's supposed to be from the performer's view. So.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, as I have read, things got real ugly stage left first, and then I guess it spread out. That was a bad place to be. You were right there, pretty much as I can piece it together, in the middle of the beginning of the horror. Very close to it.
That's correct. We were the big part of the crowd that was a direct line of sight to the Mandalay Bay. It's interesting because if you watch videos, though, people on the right side tended to get out of there, and there's videos from the left side that people just kind of took cover and stayed there. And it was really strange to watch that because what a horrific experience to just sit there and take cover and, you know, hope for the best.
I noticed that too. When you look at the videos, what goes through your mind and your heart? What kind of emotional response do you have when you see and you hear?
You know, it kind of brings me back to that night, and the heart rate gets elevated, my adrenaline goes up,
right?
Because that was my response. My response was to get the four women that I was there with, including my wife, out of there. And so, just watching that, I just feel that again. It's like it drives your anxiety back up. But I have been almost—I don't know if I want to say obsessed, but very interested in looking at those videos, because I think they're a big piece of the evidence of what happened that night. You know, we
Huge.
Live in an age where so many people can record things, and I
Yes.
think there's a lot of things captured on people's cell phone cameras that are significant when it comes to the evidence.
I'm sure there are. At least there were. The FBI has, as you probably know, collected as many smartphones and cell phones and laptops and notebooks as they could possibly find, and they finally gave them back to the owners, all scrubbed completely clean. No more pictures, nothing.
I read that today, and gosh, my blood boiled when I read that today. I can't think of a reason that they would delete people's personal property other than trying to control the narrative of what's going on.
You're 100% right. There is no other explanation. None. That's it. Total control. And it also suggests quite clearly that they're trying to cover things up. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
I agree. I can't think of another reason that they would do that.
No. All right. How did it start?
Okay. So that description that you read, I wrote on Monday night, the 2nd, which was the following day, maybe about 24 hours after the event had occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And that was written... I'm sure I was still in shock, but I felt that I needed some therapy in getting that out. And that was after, 24 hours of when I was awake listening to the news about this event. So we had been told one shooter, one shooter, one shooter. He acted alone, etc. So it wasn't until the next morning that I really started to decompress and think about things that I saw. And I realized that... there's some initial pops that you can hear on some videos during Jason Aldean's song, Any Old Barstool.
Mm-hmm.
And those pops were not gunfire. They were firecrackers set off inside the venue about 25 to 30 feet from where I was standing. And I have vivid memories of seeing the flashes from those fireworks on the ground.
Sure.
And seeing a portion of the crowd kind of push away from them, almost form a circle around them so that they wouldn't be standing on top of them.
Right.
And one thing that I remember as well is that sound being so distinctly different from the sound of when the first shooter started shooting, because I was so close to them that I could pinpoint the location of that sound. I looked instantly where that sound was coming from, and I could tell that it was on the ground inside the venue. And my recollection of that was that it was 15 seconds later the shooting started, and I went back and I found a video to just kind of measure that against, and I counted the seconds in between the end of those firecrackers and when the shooting started. It was 22 seconds later.
What do you think? Is it possible A signal of some kind? Or a coincidence? What?
I think it's hard to call it a coincidence. I'll say that there was never anything else that went on like that during the concert venue during those 3 days.
Ah, 3 days.
Firecrackers, uh-huh. Sparklers, anything like that. So suddenly, 22 seconds before he starts shooting, mm-hmm. somebody sets off firecrackers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it had to have either been a signal or a psychological warfare tactic to get people to normalize the sound of gunfire so that they wouldn't react.
Very interesting.
So it could have been both of those things, but I think it had to at least be one of those two things.
I'm with you on that. We'll get back to the PSYOP aspect of it, what the psychological profiling of an event like this might have been planned to be in a little bit. But let's just go from the first gunshots. You knew what you were hearing. Certainly were not firecrackers. What went through your mind? Was it one of those moments that, as you look back on it, it just kind of blurry, or was it crystal clear when you heard those first shots?
No, it was crystal clear to me, because when I heard the firecrackers, that's not a funny joke to me. I was instantly kind of on high alert, like, you know, I don't like those kind of shenanigans. I don't want to be here if people are going to be acting like that. So I was actually already getting ready to tell our group, because some of us had taken our boots off that night. And we were just, you know, dancing in our socks on that AstroTurf. And I was getting ready to tell them to put their boots back on, because I wanted to move if people started acting weird. So as soon as I was turning around to do that, that's when the gunfire started going off.
Yeah, the firecrackers, I hear what you're saying. Very uncool to do that. Okay, we got gunfire. Then what?
So I told the girls that I was with, I said, get down, get your boots on. We got to get the hell out of here, basically. So we took cover, and we were putting our boots on as fast as we could. And as soon as I could tell that people's boots were on, I told them, you know, stay down, keep your, you know, take cover, keep your hands up over your head if you can. And as soon as that first volley stopped, I said, okay, get up, move, stay low. And so we got up and we started moving, and it seems like almost as soon as we were able to do that, start moving, fire started going off again. So I said, get down, and we took cover again. And I could tell that the gunfire was coming from the general direction of the southwest. I couldn't tell exactly where it was coming from, and it makes complete sense now, because that initial gunfire coming from Mandalay Bay, coming from that far away, it's impossible to pinpoint exactly where it is. And so as we got down that second time, a lot of people around us were reacting to what we were doing, because people at first were just kind of standing there going, what's that? So right. A lot of people around us mm-hmm. started running when we started running and got down again. And as we took cover that time, somebody laying right in front of me, a gentleman, got hit. And he cried out, and he flinched, his body flinched, and he kicked me in the head. And I think at that point, you know, it got very real to everybody who was right around us, who could understand what was going on right there. And to me, it got to the point where, gosh, you know, it seemed like this was going on a long time already. I could tell that whoever was shooting had an automatic weapon, or at least what sounded like an automatic weapon, and had large capacity of rounds, however they were doing that, whether that be magazines or another feeding device. But it was long strings of gunfire one string.
For all of us who've watched the videos, we hear you. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And so as soon as there was a break in the gunfire, I told the girls to get up and move, run, stay low. Keep your heads down, stay low. And so we started running towards the hotel right there is like MGM area. We're running to the north, and then we were running to the east. As we got past the stand stage, we were running like northeast, And one more time, when we were still in the venue, shooting started again. And I told the girls, just keep moving, stay low. And as we moved to the right, there's a bank of porta potties there to our left. And there was a fence that either got pushed down or was opened. And so we moved towards that general direction. And in the funnel of getting in to, like, the crowd that's trying to funnel through this area where we could get out,
right,
we lost two of our group. So it ended up being my wife, myself, and my wife's best friend, and then two other girls fortunately stayed together. So we moved out of the... Go ahead.
The guy that was hit, who kicked you involuntarily, you heard the sound of the bullet hitting him?
Yes.
And did he expire?
I don't know. I believe when he was hit kind of in the upper shoulder, mm-hmm, maybe in his shoulder blade or just above it.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is because the sound of gunfire is one thing, but when it hits people, there's often a reported thud or something. And
right,
go ahead.
It sounds, you're correct. It sounds completely different, and it sounds different than bullets hitting the pavement or the ground near you.
Mm-hmm.
You can just tell that it hits something softer.
Understood. When you were running, did you hear bullets hitting the concrete, the pavement, or the AstroTurf, or any of the ground you were on? Could you hear it?
You could hear it. I was very focused on getting out of there.
Sure.
But you could hear it. And as we were running, as we were trying to funnel into that area where we could exit the venue, you know, there was people going down around us too. So, you know, I was just so focused on telling those girls to stay low and keep moving.
Right. People going down, you saw these people going down. You saw them on the ground. Were they crying? Were they yelling? Some of them were obviously mortally wounded and probably quiet. The screaming must have been remarkable. You can hear it in the video. These people who were hit and went down, at that point in time, there's a surging throng around them. People must have been stepping over them. There must have been some kind of a panic. How did the crowd in general act in terms of the fact that there were people shot down in and amongst them?
It was just sheer chaos. You know, those people obviously were trying to, if they noticed they had gone down, we're trying to grab them, we're trying to get them to safety. But in general, you know, you have thousands of people trying to move out right there. And it was just, you know, people
right,
just trying to get out as fast as they could. There's at one point after we exited the venue, and we were trying to run to the northeast.
Uh-huh.
There was a line of bushes that just was so thick that you would normally not push your way through them. But everybody's pushing their way through these bushes to get out of there. And a girl had fallen down on one side. So I had pushed my wife and her friend through these bushes. And just to my left, this girl was trying to push through and she had fallen down. And the crowd is trying to push through this bush on top of her as she's like, when she's down in the bush. And I was trying to like tell these people, hold on. And I was holding them back with one arm and I was reaching over the bush with my other arm, trying to help this girl up so that she wouldn't get trampled by everybody trying to get out of there. And that's how it was that whole time.
And the firing is going on, in your estimation, while you're there, stop, start, stop, start. How did it go?
Right. So I remember three long volleys before we were able to get towards that fence where
mm-hmm.
we could get out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another long volley as we were exiting that fence, and we briefly ducked behind a police SUV was right there, and it had the back open, and we kind of just ducked behind it for a second, and I was looking for threats, and I was looking for a way to go. And as we were ducked behind that police SUV, all of a sudden I heard from my right side, which would have been, if you're looking at the stage, to the left of the stage.
Yes.
And I just heard, like, really loud. Like, it was just too close to have been the original shooter.
No way from the hotel. No way.
No, it's no way. It wasn't coming from the direction of the hotel. It was to my right-hand side. If you look at Google pictures of the venue, there's like a construction site behind the stage, and it was from that general area. I don't know exactly how far, but loud enough to where I'm like, that's very close. And I'm a shooter. I belong to a private gun club. I've been all over at different ranges when people are at the rifle range shooting. And, you know, that sounded like these people were within maybe 150 or 200 yards at most. This gun was couldn't have been more than 200 yards away from us based on how loud it was from where we were.
There are a number of reports, more coming in all the time, of people in the crowd who claim that they had friends and saw other people who were shot from ground level, not from above. That
right.
There were shooters at ground level, plural, not just one, others. There is a report of one person on videotape in the crowd at ground level shooting as well. Your thoughts on that?
What I'll say there is I never personally saw with my own eyes somebody else shooting at me. That being said, what my ears told me and what it just felt like, because you could hear bullets too, Jeff. You could hear bullets going by. They cause a whoosh when they're close enough to you to hear. And initially, when we were taking cover and you could hear these bullets going by, you also heard and saw evidence of them hitting the ground near you, right? But when we were running out of the venue and it sounded like there was a shooter to our right, I heard that loud sound of somebody who sounded like they were closer, and you could hear bullets and nothing hitting the ground.
They went right on by, overhead, between people, whatever. And maybe they even hit some people. I follow you 100%. Very good observation. You're a shooter, you know. Most interesting. You know now, but you didn't know then, that they're trying to hang this on another lone gunman. Another lone gunman. God, when are they going to give that up? You must be pretty angry at this point. Because even if that was the only instance that you encountered of another weapon being fired from a closer range and bullets whizzing past you, not coming down from the 32nd floor, but whizzing past you, how do you feel about that now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than, yeah, I am angry. It doesn't make sense. It makes you just kind of wonder what's going on. And I came across another article today that has to do with the FBI covering up documents. And it goes all the way back to that Clinton Lynch tarmac meeting back from the election and FBI hiding documents that Judicial Watch undercovered. And it's just like, you know, and it just feels people, so many people don't understand. They don't get it. But it just feels like we were, attacked by our own government, and whether or not they orchestrated or not, the fact that they're not willing to be honest with the people about what happened, it just makes you sick. My wife has said a number of times she feels like we were in the Hunger Games.
You know, Rick, you weren't around when they murdered JFK, but what you're describing is the same hideous feeling of betrayal.
Yeah, and I know a little bit about that assassination and the kind of cloud that surrounds it. But that's just, I don't know how to explain it to people. If you weren't there and you didn't experience what we experienced other than tell my story, that's what it feels like, is that we're being betrayed.
When the bullets were whooshing by you, making that noise that they do, that had to have been within 25 feet for you to hear them pretty clearly, I would guess. What's your guess?
Yeah, I would say probably that. Yeah, probably no more than 15 yards or something like that.
Right.
I vividly remember when I heard those whooshes as we were moving our way out of the venue, I remember rounds hitting the ground or people near us when we heard that. So
how
it
many
had to have been, you know, relatively close.
Oh, yes. How many volleys from the gunman or gunmen that you suspect were shooting at ground level?
That I personally heard, that I can say, you know, I'm convinced that this guy was on the ground, was basically three bursts from our right-hand side as we were exiting the venue.
Okay. All right, what happened next?
So we're ducking behind that
police SUV.
And we hear that, and just across the way, there's a little pony wall, like a little retaining wall that's only maybe like a foot high on our side and a couple feet drop maybe. And then there's a parking lot area. And I told the girls, we're going that way. Stay low, stay in between the cars, use them as cover as we move. So we hopped over that little wall, and we went through this little parking lot area, and we were moving towards Hooters Hotel. And there's a little, I don't know if it's an apartment building or a nightclub. It's black cinder block. I remember that. And it had a back door open, and people were funneling into that. And that's where we pushed through those bushes that I described earlier. So I pushed my wife and her friend through, and then I pushed through after trying to help that girl help her get up. So we pushed through and we moved around that black building. I didn't want to go inside at that point. It just felt like this was going on all around us. I didn't want to be trapped in a confined space, so we kept moving.
You had a sense that there was no real for sure safe direction to go. It sounds like you felt you were kind of surrounded in a way with danger.
Right. The initial shots were so clearly from our southwest. But as we, and so that's why we initially started moving northeast. But as we moved, as we got out, you know, it sounded like, oh, there were shots from our south as well. So we were just trying to keep moving and get as far away from that venue as we could. I didn't want to run into a little building where, you know, somebody might run in behind us and shoot everybody.
Exactly. All right, you're running toward Hooters. What happens next?
So we run towards Hooters. We're moving around Hooters. There's a back door in Hooters that a lot of people are funneling into, but we, again, we didn't do that because we just didn't feel safe going into a space like that. So we run around Hooters, and we're on the east side of Hooters when I tell my wife to call her friend that we got separated from. And she, her phone was dying, so she texted her my number and said, call Ricky. So she called me, and they had moved the same way we did, fortunately. So they were actually just past us. And so there's a large sign in between Hooters and a Motel 6 there. I don't remember what's on it, but we, you know, we could both see it. So we made that our landmark, and we met there. And right as we were getting up to that sign, all of a sudden there was a stampede of people trying to get away from Hooters. Like everybody was funneling into Hooters, and then all of a sudden everybody was trying to get away from Hooters. So we started sprinting again with the crowd to get away from there.
Were they screaming, yelling, and quiet? What were they doing?
Yeah, I mean, you could hear screams, and it was just, you know, by that point, we're kind of a decent distance away from the venue, and a lot of people, everybody's still moving for the most part that aren't taking cover in a building. Everybody's still moving, but nobody's sprinting, and a lot of people, you know, at that point are crying. They're hysterical. People are vomiting, But they're, you know, they're still trying to move. But then all of a sudden, there's just this swell of people sprinting away from Hooters. So I don't know what they saw or what they heard, but they were trying to get the heck away from Hooters. So we knew we didn't want to be there either. So we sprinted further east down Tropicana.
Okay.
So then at that point, we're passing Motel 6. We're getting close to McCarran Airport. And we had heard from somebody that there was rumor that a shooter had stolen a police vehicle. So we were very, just being very cautious of everything, trying to notice, you know, everything we can notice if anything's a threat. And so I'm looking around at all the vehicles. Every time there's a siren going by, you know, you get a little bit nervous because of what we had heard. And this dark sedan starts rolling down Tropicana Avenue, and they're all the way to the right, like as close to the curb as they could get. And there's a girl hanging out the window. She's like standing on the floorboard with her whole torso hanging out the passenger side window.
Right.
And she had dark skin, like brown skin, not super dark, but brown skin.
Uh-huh.
And really dark hair, like black or really dark brown. It was straight and long. She was thin. And she's yelling at us, and she's pointing at us repeatedly as the crowd is moving away from the concert area, from Hooters as well. And I could not understand what she was saying, but you could see in her face, you could tell by the gesture of her arms that she was like taunting us. She was happy to see what we were going through.
You didn't recognize any of the sounds from her mouth. No words were recognized. Another language.
I could not understand what she was saying at all. And mm-hmm. It was loud. The road noise was loud. Mm-hmm. There was people crying, you know, and screaming. And so it was really hard to understand what she was saying.
What were her hand gestures? Yeah, go ahead.
She was like moving her arm back and forth and like pointing at us repeatedly, like almost in a tomahawk motion, but with her, you know, with her index finger out pointing at us.
And her face?
She just—you could just like a yelling and like a scowl, like a mean look on her face, and she was I could just feel that it was like vitriolic.
Sounds like total hate.
And that's exactly what I felt in the moment. My stomach, just the pit of my stomach fell out, you know. And I'll never forget her face. If I saw her today, I would recognize her.
Olive skin, Middle Eastern skin, or Latino? What's your thought? I'm not trying to lead you anywhere. I'm just trying to nail this down.
I understand, yeah. I don't know if I've seen a Middle Eastern woman with skin quite that light. It was mm-hmm. brown, but it was light brown. Mm-hmm. So that led me, I think it's more likely that she was Latino than mm-hmm. it is Middle Eastern, but she could have been Middle Eastern as well.
Your closest time hearing her, how many feet away? They're across the street, I guess, huh?
No, she's on the same side of the street that we are, as close to the curb as they could drive, you know, and move.
And she was facing you as they went by?
Yeah. Yeah, she was facing us as they went by. All the crowd right there that was on the south side of Tropicana moving down.
That couldn't have been very many feet away from you. You got a hell of a look. Wow.
Yeah, I mean if I was prepared, like if I had known what she was doing,
yeah.
You know, 10 feet down the road, I probably could have reached out and touched her.
You know the report of the woman allegedly walking around the front rows before the event started, I guess, that concert event, yelling, "You're all going to die, you're going to die."
Right.
She was described as a Latino type as well.
She was. And that, I hadn't heard that story that night.
No.
I don't think it was until maybe Tuesday or Wednesday that week that I heard that story, but I instantly thought, I wonder if that can be the same girl.
Well, it sounds like whoever it was had plenty of hate to go around for several people. That's an astounding thing to see in a situation like that. I had no idea that I read this, but on the same side of the street, right next to you guys, unreal. All right, so you went toward the airport a little more, I guess.
Right, we kept going towards the airport. I'll say this really quick as well. At that point, none of the cars knew what was going on. You know, there's herds of people crossing
uh-huh.
Tropicana,
uh-huh.
and people are stopping and asking us, like, what the hell is going on, right? And so that car seemed like she was the only one who knew what was going on.
Understood.
That was on the road.
Got you loud and clear on that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we moved towards... we move towards the airport. We get up to a terminal entrance at the airport, and a lot of people are funneling into the airport. And my initial thought is the airport has security, like this could be a good place to hide out. So we walk into the airport, and we instantly kind of stop after a few steps and look around, and it just seemed like such a confined space that we just turned around and left. So we decided we didn't want to stay in the airport. So we kept moving east down Tropicana. We ended up moving across Tropicana to the north side because there was a little shopping center there. There was a liquor store that was open.
A little market or something? Yeah.
Yeah, like a little liquor store, like a Vegas liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
And they were gracious, and they gave us some water bottles. When I was in that parking lot, my wife reminded me that my uncle works in Vegas on the weekends a lot because he's a DJ. So we called him, and he was still there, fortunately, and we arranged for him to pick us up down the street, which ended up being at a Vons. It's at, like, Maryland or Marigold Avenue and Tropicana Avenue.
Maryland Parkway.
Maryland Parkway, there you go. Maryland Parkway at and Tropicana. So we kept moving east down Tropicana. We had to cross back over. There was an Arco in between us where we were when we talked to my uncle and that Vons. And he had mentioned an Arco, so we tried to meet up there, but he was unable to get that far down Tropicana once he got to Tropicana Avenue, so we ended up having to move further down to the Bond.
Mm-hmm.
At the intersection there at the Arco, there was like a limo and some taxis stopped, and there was one other group with us at that point kind of moving down Tropicana Avenue, and they got the limo driver's attention. We were trying to tell him what was going on, like, please let us in, get us out of here. And it became clear he wasn't going to let us in, so we moved a little bit further across the intersection, and a taxi was going to let us in. And then she realized that we had five people, and she said she only had four seats.
Oh, God.
And I just remember feeling so frustrated, like, you don't understand what's going on, you know? Well, who cares how many seats you have? So we ended up moving across to the Arco and ran into a couple more people. At one point, these people offered us a ride in a truck. And so we all piled into the bed of their truck, and then we heard from them they were going back toward, it was either Hooters or MGM.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. And they were, because they were looking for somebody that they were missing.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that we weren't going to go back that way. So we got back out of the truck and just kept moving down to the Bonds, where we eventually met my uncle. And then we drove a couple miles south around.
How did you meet up with the other missing girls?
That's where we met at the
at
sign.
At the sign?
In between Hooters and Motel 6. When she called me back, we met at a sign there that we could see. So we met right there, just east of Hooters, right before that stampede started to get away from Hooters.
Right. Are people running by you? Is anyone talking about the number of people who had been injured, hurt, or the casualties that were being taken over there at the venue? Or are they just trying to get the hell away and not talking about that at all?
Most people are not necessarily talking about that. Most groups, you saw people kind of freaking out. A lot of people trying to comfort people and tell people, like, hey, we got to keep moving. You know, there's a lot of people who just wanted to sit down and freeze or cry, and a lot of people telling Colin, we got to keep moving, you know. And so you didn't hear a lot of conversation about what had happened, more just people being in shock and
total
and
shock,
trying to deal with what was going on and get to safety.
Okay. Now, you got away. Everyone was uninjured, thank God. You had one friend with you, and we need to talk about this. And I don't know that you want to, but I've got her story up there. And I have her picture up as well. And she is, she survived this horrible night, Kimberly. And tell us what happened, to the best of your knowledge.
So Kimberly's a dear friend of ours, and just like the rest of us, you know, she we went through a traumatic experience, and we were all trying to figure out how to deal with it. And much like my wife, Kimberly took in a lot of what was around us. I was very focused on getting them out of there. And so I, even though I saw people getting shot and going down around us, I wasn't focused on that. I was focused on looking for threats and keeping everybody moving. But the, at least a couple of the girls focused on those things, and Kimberly was one of them. And so at, you know, at night and even sometimes during the day, just her trauma and her thoughts, really were getting to her about the event. And so Kimberly also had a condition that caused epileptic seizures.
Mm-hmm.
So on Sunday, we had a group chat going since the incident where all of us were in there, and we, you know, talking about just different things, but a lot about what had happened, what we saw, the different news stuff coming out, and right. That sort of thing.
This is a week and after the event. This is six days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On Sunday night, we all posted a post on our Facebook, marking the 1 week, you know, since the event at 10:05 PM, we all posted a picture of our boots and a little text to go along with it, with some hashtags like Vegas Strong and that sort of stuff. But just before we made those posts, Kimberly had told us that she had experienced 3 focal seizures mm-hmm. on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and she had never had 3 seizures in a day before.
Mm-hmm.
And so the last thing she sent into our group chat that night was posted when we posted our stuff at 10:05. Her husband was with her that night, but he had to go to work at 4:30 in the morning. And her grandma found her fallen on the floor of their bedroom I think sometime around 7:30 or 8 o'clock the next morning. It appears like she had another seizure and for whatever reason passed away as a result.
Thank you for explaining that. I do have her picture up. I have her account up, and I want to honor her to the best of my ability, and you just did a wonderful job. So I urge all of you to read her account. She describes herself as a big girl who doesn't run anywhere, and I remember reading how she said, "I ran like I'd never run in my life."
Yeah. She always told me, she always used to tell me, "Don't call me Kim, call me Kimberly." She said, When I hear Kim, I think of a small Asian man, and that's the opposite of what I am.
What a sweet soul. I want to do a couple quick things, if I might, Rick.
Okay.
The idea that the authorities are trying to push the lone gunman at this point, it said multiple places that, anyway, this is what they're doing. You said it makes your blood boil. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it really does. I watch videos. In fact, I even made a video analyzing some audio from a clip that I heard that clearly sounds like it's 2 guns going off, and I analyzed the cyclic rates of the 2 sound reports.
Mm-hmm.
And one is at 600 rounds a minute, and the other one is at 675 rounds a minute. And one of the things about sound is that it's constant. And so there's no way that one gun shooting 600 rounds a minute can cause a series of 18, what sounds like 18 gunshots at 675 rounds a minute. It can't be echoes. It can't be bullets hitting something. It can't be caused by the same gun. And so I look at this information that's out there. I look at this evidence that's out there, and I just almost obsess over it because I know that this doesn't match up with what they're telling us. And I have like this super, super small amount of hope that they're just playing things close to the vest, and they're going to come out in one day and say, this is what really happened. But I just don't think that's what's going on at all.
From my position here at the desk for the last nearly 2 weeks now, I think this was a very sophisticated, major event. I don't think there's any other way to look at it. And too many reports. Have you heard of people, or were you contacted by anyone I'm getting stories that there are people being coerced and threatened. No, you didn't see that. This is what you saw. Are you hearing anything like that?
I haven't heard anything like that specifically. I've had people in an unofficial capacity try to do that to me when I've told my story. I haven't been contacted by anybody from media or FBI or anything like that in that regard. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that's going on. I feel like that's what they're using the media for in the first place, is to kind of brainwash people into thinking this is what happened. And, you know, after listening to the media for 24 hours before I wrote down my account, that almost happened to me. It took until the next day to really decompress and think about what I remember to realize, hey, this doesn't make sense.
I think that's the best way to sum up our conversation. This doesn't make sense. It's very difficult to entertain the concept that our country and parts within it may be involved with something like this, but we have to face that. It is a possibility. It doesn't make sense. The sense of honesty and integrity from the authorities is not there. And I don't know how much more we're going to see, but it's clearly being contrived. There's clearly a cover-up underway already. I have sources in town. One who used to work at the Mandalay has many friends there, and said there is no question among all the people he knows who work in that city that this was a clearly planned major genocide against a group of people. This was an operation. Multiple shooters, multiple areas in town reporting other events, but this was not a lone gunman. One last comment from you, Rick.
I agree with that statement. It feels a lot like we're kind of in, the George Orwell's 1984. I feel like that's the level of control we're seeing come out of the media and the officials in this case. And you're right, there's gunmen reported everywhere. I talked to a Canadian man who said he heard shots in the Bellagio after Paddock was neutralized. So, I can't discount firsthand accounts like that, and I don't see why anybody else would either.
Well said. Really well said. Rick, I want to thank you personally and on behalf of all people around the world listening right now who care, and there are a lot of them out there. And I commend you as an American citizen and as a human being for standing up. And if there's another opportunity for us to talk, maybe down the road a week or two, I would be more than honored to have you back.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Be well. And give those kids a hug for me.
Will do. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Mr. Rick Ardito, survivor. That's our program tonight. Have a good weekend.